told you all this morning that this time I'll be staying here for a few days, a little longer than other visits. I hope to stay here for, say, about 8 or 9 more days. And, well, yeah. And last time when I was here, Jai Gopal Prabhu requested me to give a class on Vaishnav etiquette. Actually, this year, starting from 20th of September, for a month in Vrindavan, there'll be a regular 1 month-long course on different subjects. And one of those subjects will be Vaishnava etiquette, and I had been asked to give the course. So, giving classes on those topics will also give me a nice practice, or it'll help me to prepare my course better, I feel. And as a matter of fact, we all have come here to become Vaishnavas. Our only objective of joining the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is to become Vaishnavas. So we have to be aware how a Vaishnava behaves and what are the basic etiquettes that a Vaishnava follows. So today we will read the verse and read the purport and have a brief discussion on the purport by Srila Prabhupada, and then we'll discuss on this Vaishnava etiquette course. And from tomorrow onwards, I was thinking that I would select a specific shloka pertaining or relevant to the subject that I would be discussing on Vaishnava etiquette, and have a course on Vaishnava etiquette. And I was also considering, although Jai Gopal Prabhu told me that I'll be, most of the evenings, I'll be going out. But if I'm here some evenings, then I would like to discuss on the lives of different Vaishnava acharyas. Actually, last time, the last class I gave, after that Mother Arhada asked me to give a class on Chaitanya Charitamrita. But so I think it'll be nice to discuss about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates in the evenings. So that will be also non-different from discussing about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Actually, the best way to approach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is through his devotees, his intimate associates. So, yeah, another thing I was also considering, since Janmashtami is only about 6-7 days from now, so it would be nice to prepare learn some prayers to Sri Krishna. Janmashtami is Krishna's birthday, and there is a very nice prayer to Krishna called Braja Raja Shutashtakam, the 8 verses glorifying Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj. And they're written in very beautiful poetry form. And the author's name is not known. Who actually composed those verses is unknown. But the style is very much like Rupa Goswami's or Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami's style of writing poetry. Rupa Goswami and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, both were very, very wonderful poets. Actually, one of the qualities of a Vaishnava is that he is a poet. But most likely it was not written by either of them, because their prayers are familiar, or people know about the compositions of Rupa Goswami and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. So if it was composed by them, then probably would have known about it. Their names would have been mentioned or known to others, the contemporary devotees. And so maybe in these few days we can memorize one or two shlokas every day. So by the time of Janmashtami, we'll be able to. By the time of Janmashtami, we'll be able to memorize all the 8 verses. And in the mornings, starting from tomorrow, maybe we can sing 1 or 2 verses after Jai Ma Radha Madhava. They're actually not very difficult, but very beautiful. Like, it goes like, Navanirada Nindita Kanti Dharam Rasu Shagaru Nagaru Bhupa Baram Shubha Bankima Charu Shikhanda Shikham Bhaja Krishna Nidhim Braja Raja Sutam Bhrubi Shankita Bankima Shakradhanam Mukha Chandra Vinindita Koti Vidhum Shubha Bankima Charu Shubha Bankima Charu Shikhanda Shikham Bhaja Krishna Nidhim Braja Raja Sutam. So this way we can memorize, and by the time of Janmashtami we can learn all these verses. Actually, the best way to glorify Krishna is through the prayers written by Krishna's devotees. So today we are going to read from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 15th chapter, text 3. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
The great sages said, the male is the plenary expansion of the power of Lord Vishnu, who maintains the entire universe, and the female is a plenary expansion of the goddess of fortune, who is never separated from the Lord. Please repeat after me. The purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The significance of the goddess of fortunes never being separated from the Lord is clearly mentioned here. People in the material world are very fond of the goddess of fortune, and they want her favor in the form of riches. They should know, however, that the goddess of fortune is inseparable from Lord Vishnu. Materialists should understand that the goddess of fortune should be worshipped along with Lord Vishnu and should not be regarded separately. Materialists seeking the favor of the goddess of fortune must worship Lord Vishnu and Lakshmi together to maintain material opulence. If a materialist follows the policy of Ravana, who wanted to separate Sita from Lord Ramachandra, the process of separation will vanquish him. Those who are very rich and have taken favor of the goddess of fortune in this world must engage their money in the service of the Lord. In this way, they can continue in their opulent position without disturbance. Especially in India, a lot of people worship Lakshmi Devi, because Lakshmi Devi is the giver of wealth. And in the material nature, everyone wants to be rich. So everyone worships Lakshmi Devi, or the goddess of fortune. And Prabhupada is pointing out that actually they should worship Lakshmi and Krishna or Vishnu together, Lakshmi and Narayan together. If they separately worship Lakshmi, it is not actually worshipping. It is kind of utilizing her to have the wealth for our sense enjoyment. But that's actually a criminal attitude. Lakshmi and Narayan are wife and husband. Narayan is the husband and Lakshmi Devi is his eternal consort or wife. So, husband and wife should always be together. One should not separate the wife for the sake of his own enjoyment. But unfortunately, in the material platform, most of the people are doing that. But this is actually a demoniac tendency. Like Ravan was a great demon who actually stole Sita Devi. Sita Devi is Lakshmi herself and Ramchandra is Narayan or Krishna himself. So Sita Ram are always together or should be always together. But Ravan, he became very attracted to Sita's beauty and he was a very powerful demon. So he tried to steal Sita. He actually stole Sita. Of course, it is not possible to steal Lakshmi because Lakshmi Devi or Sita Devi is Lord's internal potency, Lord's inseparable enjoying potency. So she can never be separated from the Lord. But Ravan was bewildered to think by the influence of Maya. Ravan thought that he actually stole Sita. But actually it was Maya Sita, or just the illusory form of Sita. But this act is a criminal act. If somebody tries to steal the eternal consort of the Lord or the wife of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is a very abominable, very heinous, demoniac action. And actually in the material platform, most of the people nowadays have become demoniac. And that's why they separate Lakshmi from Narayan and worship in so-called way to have Lakshmi's opulence for their enjoyment. Actually, literally it means that they are enjoying or trying to enjoy Lakshmi Devi. But that is actually Maya. The way Ravan tried to steal Sita and he ended up stealing Maya Sita, the same way if a materialistic person tries to enjoy Lakshmi for his benefit or for his enjoyment, that is also Maya Lakshmi. That's not actual Lakshmi. That's Maya Lakshmi. Illusory Lakshmi. And that Lakshmi has been considered to be Chanchala. Chanchala means fickle. It is also known to these materialists in India that Lakshmi doesn't stay at one place for too long. But Prabhupada pointed out that when we separate Lakshmi from Narayan, then Lakshmi is Chanchala or fickle. She doesn't stay at one place for too long. But if we worship Lakshmi with Narayan, then she becomes achanchala or steady. Then Lakshmi will remain eternally. So that is the understanding of a devotee. But trying to worship Lakshmi separately from Narayan, or worshipping just Lakshmi without considering Narayan, is a demoniac act. And Prabhupada is pointing out that if we want opulence, we can worship Lakshmi. But that opulence must be engaged in Krishna's service. Otherwise, that will be the cause of our destruction. Like Ravan was very powerful. Ravan was so powerful that he defeated all the demigods. He drove the demigods out of their kingdom, heaven. And he became the controller of heaven. And he was conquering one after another planets, heavenly, spirit, or rather, heavenly planets. He was conquering one after another. There's a very nice story regarding that. Now, Ravan was actually conquering one after another planets. And so when he came to the planet when he came to the planet Saturn, Saturn's influence is very devastating. So Saturn actually looked at Ravan and at Lanka, and Narad, I think, came to Ravan and told him that, look, Saturn is not looking at you, he is looking at somewhere else. So Ravan forced Saturn to look at him, and because of Saturn's glance on Ravan, Ravan became destroyed. Like all the evil things began to happen to Ravan. And that is what happens. Like Saturn, materially actually, Saturn is very bad. Influence of Saturn is very bad. But spiritually, the influence of Saturn is very good. Because Saturn takes away one's material attachment. Saturn burns out all material opulences or all material assets. So for a materialist, Saturn, influence of Saturn is very bad. But for a spiritualist, the influence of Saturn is very good. It is said that when the influence of Saturn is complete on a person, then he becomes a sannyasi. So for a spiritualist it is good, because all his material karma or material attachments are burned out and he becomes a sannyasi. So, but for a person who wants to enjoy the material nature, for him it is very bad, because he doesn't like the idea that everything should be burnt out, all the material enjoyments should be burnt out. So we are very fortunate that we have been blessed by Srila Prabhupada and we learned the wise approach to Lakshmi Devi, that is, worshipping Lakshmi Devi with Narayan or Krishna. Or we actually worship Lakshmi Devi in the form of Radha Rani and Krishna as Narayan. Actually, Lakshmi and Narayan are expansions of Radha Rani and Krishna. The original form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna, and his original potency is Srimati Radharani. And if we keep on serving them, we will always have the blessings of Lakshmi Devi. We will never be deprived of Lakshmi's blessings. And we have seen that when we serve Radha Krishna in the temple, we never have any scarcity. Although we all are basically renunciates, even the householders in Krishna consciousness are renunciates. They have given up all their material possessions and they have completely surrendered themselves in rendering service to Krishna. They have completely surrendered themselves to Krishna. So that is also the position of a renunciate. Actually, the temple is a Vaikuntha. The temple is the Vaikuntha planet. And the devotees in the temple are the inhabitants of Vaikuntha. And the position of Vaikuntha is beyond the platform of renunciation. The platform, the perfect platform of renunciation is Brahma-Bhuta platform. To be situated on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Because that region is beyond material nature. But beyond the Brahma-Bhuta platform is the Vaikuntha planet. So we have to understand that the devotees have already transcended the perfect position of a sannyasi. And they have become engaged in serving Radha Krishna, Lakshmi Narayan in Vaikuntha. So the brahmacharis, householders, vanaprasthis and sannyasis in Krishna consciousness are actually beyond the platform of renunciation. They have become engaged in positive service or positive engagement. In the material nature, we all are engaged in a negative engagement. Whatever we are doing in the material platform is causing us misery or suffering. That is a negative activity. If we act in such a way that our activities will give us suffering and misery, that is not a good activity. That is negative activity. So from the negative activity, we reach the position of neutrality. Or from the negative point, we reach the point of zero, which is not negative. But beyond that position of zero, beyond the point of neutrality, is the positive region. And spiritual sky is the positive region. And the activities in the positive region gives us enjoyment. Whatever we do in the positive platform gives us joy. So devotees are situated in that platform of enjoyment or transcendental service. So everyone in Krishna consciousness has been engaged in that positive service. Doesn't matter whatever his ashram is. Actually, if we look at it from the right perspective, from the spiritual perspective, then the position of a sannyasi is the lowest. Because below the position of Vaikuntha, below Vaikuntha is Brahma Jyoti. Brahma Jyoti is below Vaikuntha, and the position of a sannyasi is in the Brahma-Bhuta platform, the perfected Brahma-Bhuta platform. But of course, that is not the kind of sannyas we take. Our sannyas is renouncing everything for the sake of serving Krishna, for the sake of pleasing Krishna. So that is the difference between Ekadanda sannyas and Tridanda sannyas. Ekadandi sannyas is they want to become one with Brahma, which is called Brahma Sajujya. But we are Tridandi sannyasis. And the Tridandi sannyasis are the sannyasis who has given or offered his body, mind and words, these three things to the service of the Lord. With his body, with his mind and with his words, he serves Krishna. So that is the understanding of Tridanda sannyas. So in Krishna consciousness, everyone is actually doing that or should do that. So that's why Prabhupada often pointed out that in Krishna consciousness, even the householders are sannyasis. Because they are also engaged in serving the Lord with their body, mind and words. So when we become engaged in serving the Lord like that, then we'll never have any scarcity. Then Lakshmi Devi will give us her full blessings. But if we deviate from that, instead of offering Lakshmi Devi to Krishna, if we try to use Lakshmi Devi for our enjoyment, then that will be the cause of our bondage, and that will be the cause of our suffering. And then ultimately Lakshmi Devi will leave us. She will appear as Maya Lakshmi, and then she will leave us. So if we want to have the favor or blessings of Lakshmi Devi, then we must worship her with Krishna, and we must offer everything that we have in the service of Krishna. And the wonderful thing about serving Krishna is that whatever we offer to Krishna actually multiplies. Like if we give something to Krishna with a pure intention, with a pure heart, then whatever we offer to Krishna will come back to us multiplied by many folds. Like we prepare food stuff for Krishna and we offer it to Krishna. And when we offer it to Krishna, then it comes back to us. And we don't have any scarcity. Like we have so much Krishna prasad that we can eat to our full satisfaction. Plus, we can eat thousands of people. So we offer to Krishna, and it comes back to us as transcendental food, and then we eat that food. That food doesn't only satisfy our hunger, it actually satisfies the hunger of many more. So that principle actually applies in all respects. Whatever we offer to Krishna will come back to us multiplied by manifold. So now to go back to the Vaishnav etiquette course, the course has been divided. Actually, this course will last for 1 month, and there will be 20 lessons. It's starting from the 20th of September and will continue till the 20th of October. And they have been divided into different sections. The first one is the etiquette between Vaishnavas, etiquette in the temple, etiquette towards the holy name, etiquette towards Krishna's dham and holy items, etiquette with prasadam, etiquette in dressing and tilak, etiquette with guests and at public appearances. So these are the 7 sections. And then the lessons have been divided into 20. 1 and 2 is philosophy of etiquette, what etiquette is, what it does, what it means to our preaching. 3 is etiquette in the temple, obeisances, circumambulating, and the 64 offenses. 4, seeing the deity, meditation, and offerings. 5, receiving guests and Vaishnavas in the temple. 6, etiquette within relationships, grihasthas, sannyasis, godbrothers, gurus, common people, and members of other sampradayas. 7, avoiding and rectifying Vaishnava aparads, how to speak to devotees and speak about them. 8, how to treat guests in one's home, initial greetings, sitting arrangements, refreshments, speaking about business, etc. 9 and 10, how to serve and honor prasadam. 11, kirtan etiquette, how to lead, follow, dance, and relish. 12, japa etiquette, how to handle beads, how to chant, and how to avoid offenses. 13, premadhani prayers, pronunciation, meaning, and practice. 14, dressing and tilak. 15 and 16, etiquette in public, how to speak and act outside programs, at the homes of life members and friends, with relatives, and at mats or ashrams. 17, how to respect holy items. 18 and 19, how to act in holy places, how to respect holy rivers, demigod temples, and abodes of Vishnu, and how to avoid offenses. 20, how to respect other sampradayas and religions. So these are the 20 lessons. So I was thinking maybe we'll be able to, we will cover up to 10. That is, the last one is how to serve and honor prasadam. 9 and 10. So, and today I want to discuss some basic, the preliminary approach to this topic, Vaishnav etiquette. The Sanskrit word for Vaishnav etiquette is Vaishnav Sadachar. Shat, the Sadachar is a conjunction of two words, Shat and Achar. Shat means a saintly person. And Achar means activities. How a saintly person acts or should act is called Vaishnav Sadachar. Like Vaishnav doesn't simply mean shaving the head, putting tilak and wearing a kanti bead, wearing dhoti and kurta and so on and so forth. Vaishnav actually is a person who is situated in his spiritual identity. Vaishnav is a pure spirit soul or a spirit soul who is aspiring to become pure. So the activities of a Vaishnav is always very pure. And the way a Vaishnav acts, that's called Vaishnav Sadachar or Vaishnav etiquette. Like when you become a policeman, then we have to act in certain ways. When we become a policeman and wear the police uniform, we cannot just act like anybody else. Or when you become a soldier in the army, and wearing the uniform of a soldier, we have to act in certain way, very disciplined way. So same way, when we dress up like a Vaishnav, we have to act in a very specific way. And that is called Vaishnav etiquette. So today I'll just discuss some basic Vaishnav practices that are very common, and Srila Prabhupada instructed us about them. Like Srila Prabhupada gave us few instructions or few rules. Like one is, we must get up before 4 a.m. We must get up before Brahma Muhurta and attained Mangalaratik. That is one of the Vaishnav practices for us. Because ours is a society of Vaishnav known as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And it is a must. Prabhupada said everybody must attain Mangalaratik. That means one must get up before 4 a.m. Here, of course, I think one must get up before, at least before 3 a.m., 3:30 a.m. Then take bath when you wake up from sleep. Not only in the morning when we wake up, we must take bath right after getting up. But Prabhupada actually said that whenever we sleep for 2 hours, if we sleep for more than 2 hours, then we must take a bath. And it is preferable not to sleep during the daytime. It is better to go to bed early and get up early than go to bed late and get up early and then sleep during the daytime. Actually, if we strictly follow the Vaishnava etiquettes, then it is considered that to sleep during the day is a crime, is a sin. And one must atone for that sin. So preferably we would try to, it is better to try to go to sleep early and get up early. Early to bed, early to rise makes a man healthy, wealthy and wise. So it is very good, even from the materialistic understanding, to get up early. But in order to get up early, we must go to bed early also. And according to Ayurveda, if we go to sleep, if the sleep that we have before 12 midnight, 1 hour sleep is like 2 hours sleep after midnight. Like if we sleep for 2 hours before 12, it is like 4 hours after 12. 4 hours sleep after 12 midnight. Sometimes it becomes difficult to go to sleep early, especially when we have late night programs. In those cases, of course, it can be considered. Like if somebody goes to bed late, then he should at least, Prabhupada says, one should at least get 6 hours sleep. And if somebody gets up for Mangal Arati, for him, to cover up that 6 hours sleep, he can sleep during the day. That is different. But otherwise, we should try not to sleep for more than 6 hours. So, even during the day, if you sleep for more than 2 hours, you must take a bath. Taking bath is very good. Even medically or biologically, it says that taking bath actually rejuvenates our blood circulation and makes us feel fresh. So, more often we can take bath is actually better for us. Then another consideration is, one must take bath after passing stool. As Vaishnavas, always take bath after passing stool. Prabhupada gave this instruction very definitely. Then one must wash himself, his hand and feet, after passing urine. Then one must wash his hands, feet, mouth before taking prasad and after taking prasad. In the West, people are accustomed to the habit of using knives and forks. So after taking their food, they don't bother to wash their hands and feet. But in India, it's a very common practice to wash their hands and feet before taking prasad and after taking prasad. Because when you are using your hands, then you have to be careful that your hands are clean before you take prasad. And after you have taken prasad with your hands automatically become dirty. So you have to wash them. So it is actually better to use hands to take prasad. Actually, the digestion begins with touching the food with hands. Actually, digestion begins with seeing the food. When you see the food, then you begin to assimilate it. You get the idea in your mind what you are going to eat. Then you touch it with your hand, then you have the feel. And then you mix the food according to your taste. And then you put it in your mouth. And then you taste it with your tongue. And then it goes to your stomach. So process of digestion actually begins much before you put the food in your stomach or even in your mouth. And especially, Prabhupada said that the brahmanas should cook the food themselves. A brahmin always cooks his food in the Vedic culture, in the Vedic society. And when one is cooking the food, he is actually getting the feeling what he is cooking, how he is cooking. So that's why it is very important that one cooks for himself, then offers it to Krishna. And by offering it to Krishna, actually when one cooks the food, he is meditating how Krishna is going to like it or what kind of food Krishna likes to eat. And then you have to automatically cook nicely. Because if you are meditating on Krishna's taste, you know Krishna has the best taste. And if you cook something that is not nice, then Krishna will not accept it. Of course, not nice means not with enough devotion. If we cook with devotion, then Krishna will take it. And devotion means meditating on how Krishna will like the food. So that's why one of the qualities of a Vaishnava is that he's a good cook also. Like Prabhupada was a perfect cook. I mean, I think Prabhupada is the best cook I have ever seen. Whatever Prabhupada cooked was so delicious. And it is a known fact that most of the devotees actually joined ISKCON being attracted by Prabhupada's cooking or the way Prabhupada taught the devotees to cook. So food is a very, very important thing. And one of the instructions Prabhupada gave me when I was serving him was, see that devotees get nice prasad. Like he told me that these boys and girls have sacrificed everything. They have given up all sense enjoyments. The only sense enjoyment that they indulge in is Krishna prasad. So make sure that they get nice prasad. So this is one point, that everyone must wash hands and feet and mouth before taking prasad and after taking prasad. Then must brush teeth after waking up. As soon as one wakes up in the morning, he must brush his teeth. Usually in India, in the Vedic society, they use twigs of different trees, the branches of different trees like neem or babla. They're very healthy. But in the West, you don't get it, so you can use toothbrush and toothpaste. Then must wash hands even after drinking water. Even after we drink water, we must wash our hands. And that's a part of cleanliness. Actually, this concept of cleanliness is very subtle. The more we go deep into our spiritual activities, our activities or our perceptions become subtle. Like although there is no contact between the hand and mouth, you are holding the glass and drinking water, but still it is understood that your hand becomes contaminated. So one must wash his hands. Then sannyasi should take bath 3 times a day and grihasthas and brahmacharis at least 2 times a day. So that's another must. Of course, I mean, in the West often we do not really practice this, but sannyasis should take bath 3 times a day. Then after taking prasad, the area where the plates were kept must be cleaned. Of course, and also it says, one should not step on the area where prasadam was taken, because it is considered to be. At that time, after that, I think there was a speck of butter in her fingertips, and she just licked the finger. I just couldn't take that. After that, when she made that, gave me the piece of bread with a sandwich, I could not take it because I had such a dirty feeling that she licked her finger with her tongue, and then she was preparing the bread, holding the bread with the same hand. Actually, whenever we touch our mouth with our hands, we must wash our hands. And sometimes we touch our nose, especially inside of our nose, then also our hands, we must wash our hands. Then, must do achaman after putting tilak by saying Om Keshavaya Namaha, Om Narayanaya Namaha, and Om Madhavaya Namaha. So this is a practice that was not actually introduced by Prabhupada, and I didn't see anyone doing it, except in the pujaris. But it is nice, because this is a achaman, these are the achaman mantras, And after putting tilak, whenever we put tilak after taking bath, we must say, we must do achaman, put water in our palm and drink it. And then three times we must say, do achaman and say, Keshavaya, Om Keshavaya Namah, Om Narayanaya Namah, and Om Madhavaya Namah. And then use right hand for eating and drinking. In the West, people generally use both hands and to take prasad, but it is considered that left hand is contaminated. Right hand is for eating and left hand is dirty. So while eating, we do not use left hand. For eating and drinking, we should not use our left hand. So, there are some other things also that I did not mention here. The one is to observe Ekadasi. A devotee must observe the Ekadasis and the different appearance day of the Lord. And so these are the general basic practices of a Vaishnava that I intended to mention in the beginning of the class. And then I'll get into the Vaishnava etiquette course. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question? Yeah. No, I think everywhere devotees abstain from taking grains. That's a must. And I don't think anyone takes grains on Ekadasi day.
Right.
I see. The purpose, actually it has been mentioned that the fasting actually means fasting from both food and, I mean, eating, fasting even from drinking. But if one cannot, then the injunction has been given that one can eat non-grain stuffs like vegetables and roots, but not carrots, and preferably not carrots and beetroots. Instructions have been given like that. And if we can observe it nicely, it's better for us. After all, Ekadasi is the day that Krishna himself created to purify the sins of the conditioned living entities. So it is better to observe Ekadasi a little strictly. And sometimes I notice that we, instead of Ekadasi, on the day of Ekadasi, we actually have a feast, Ekadasi feast, all kinds of fries and... But it's better to be a little austere on that day. And if we have to eat, might as well take just some boiled stuff, even without spices. Actually, we have to understand that our goal is to become more and more strict with our sadhana. In the beginning, one may be a little loose, but as we become mature, we should become more and more strict. And it pays. It pays. Especially for brahmacharis and sannyasis. There are many biological considerations also, that fasting twice a month is very good for health also. And when you do something for Krishna, then it takes care of everything also. It's not only we derive spiritual benefit, we also derive material benefit. Anyway, we can have a discussion on that some other time. Yes, Panduraj Prabhu.
You said that washing of hands and washing of feet before eating. Okay, for washing your hands, you require to wash your feet again.
Yeah, because the understanding is that, you see, like you're walking to different places and your feet get dirty. And especially in India, people generally used to walk barefoot. And so it's a natural custom. When they used to come inside the house, they used to wash their feet. Like I remember, as a child, I was taught, as soon as I came home, I would go and wash my feet, not only my hands. So in the West, of course, because of the weather, people are used to wearing shoes and all, and it gives an impression that, well, the feet is not that dirty, it's quite clean. But now, of course, time has changed. Now we have central heating, hot water, right? So it's not bad washing your feet also. If it was freezing cold, and then if you had to wash your feet with cold water, that would have been difficult. But now it's easy. What? I see. We have to consider the practical aspect of it also. Like if it is not, if there is no such proper place to wash your feet, then you can forget it. But washing hands is nice. Yes. I think this cold water thing, well, of course it's nice, but I don't think it was started by Prabhupada. It was started by some, you know, some devotees, some leaders. I mean, we don't undergo unnecessary austerities. I mean, taking bath in cold water in the middle of winter, I don't know how many devotees can stand that. It is good, but we are not yogis. You see, we do not unnecessarily torture our body. We keep our body healthy so that we can render a nice devotional service to Krishna. Yes.
I heard in what was said at the beginning of standing, that it said about cleaning his hands after taking the shower.
Yeah.
That each individual to clean his own hands after taking the shower.
It is not very practical. It is good. Actually, that's what one does. You see, in the Vedic society, they used to use leaf plates, and they would take the prasad and throw the plate away. And then from the cup, he would sprinkle some water and wipe that place clean, pick up the grains or food that has been scattered around and then wipe it. But then somebody would clean the whole place with water and a little cow dung. That's how it purifies. So if it is, I mean, it is nice if somebody is assigned to do the cleaning of the whole table. Of course, it's nice that if every individual picks up the grains and cleans the place himself. But it is also preferable that somebody does the whole area or all the tables. It takes only a few minutes. Yes.
How would you say the place is dirty when
we are speaking about Prasadam? Yes, and that's a good point. The prasadam is clean, no doubt. Prasadam is absolutely pure. But our approach to the prasad is not clean, right? So we do, because we have taken it, that's why, you know, that place became contaminated. But the prasadam is, of course, clean. And if we can, if we are situated in that understanding, you know, that, you know, that pure in our consciousness, then of course we can take prasad anywhere. But in order to develop that understanding, we have to maintain certain rules of cleanliness.
Yes. Also, some children, boys, and they are using their left hand. Is that bad karma? And also, we have to change this rules or not?
Well, sometimes somebody has more affinity with his left hand. That is understandable. But at least prasadam, to take prasad does not need such skill, right? Such expert maneuvering with hands. So for that, even if he's more expert with left hand, but at least he should take prasad with his right hand.
Isn't it because of using the left hand for cleansing the body that that's why?
Yeah. But generally, you see, like, there are different considerations also. The life current, you know, actually flows in a, you see, like, it flows in two ways, centripetal and centrifugal. Like, we have a vertebral column, and then life energy is running through the vertebral column, right? And the nerve system is actually spreading out from the vertebral column. And the energy coming in flows on the right hand side of the vertebral column. And the energy going out it flows from our left hand side of the vertebral column. So that's why it is preferable to use the right hand, because then it is more tuned to your life energy. Actually, it's very, very scientific, you know, Vedic thing is very scientific.
About animal cruelty for
itself. Well, right, that's true. it's not practical in a temple. Like when you're living in a temple, it is preferable that offered to Krishna. If somebody wants to cook, he can cook, but it must be taken together. That is the understanding. And say for instance, like I like to cook myself generally. So what I do is, I prefer to take very simple prasad, like some rice and boiled vegetables and so on and so forth. So cook it and make the offering, but take it together with the devotees. That's what I prefer to do. Like, if somebody has some, you know, problem like that, like can't take too spicy thing, or he wants to cook himself, he can do it, but must be offered to Krishna, and it should be taken together with the other devotees. Not that everybody goes to the kitchen and cooks for himself. That is not a devotional way of doing it. Our understanding is in the temple everything must be offered to Krishna. And actually, there's a difference between just brahmanas and devotees. Devotees are actually situated in a more elevated platform than the brahmanas. So the brahmanas are particularly fastidious about cooking themselves. But devotees, they cook for Krishna, and then they they eat, offer it to others, and accept others' prasad too.
You said the cook in the temple is very important role.
Yeah, right.
Right,
that's true.
By his consciousness.
Yes, very true. So actually, it is important that very sattvic, the cook is a very sattvic person. And I notice here we are very fortunate to have a very sattvic cook.
What about cooking for the day? Did you do something in the mood of
I do it because it's my duty, but not so much devotion or sort of dedication. I can't quite do that. Because many times, if one cooks every day, the time she needs a curry because they do it every day, sometimes it becomes...
Yeah. Devotional service is rendered spontaneously with love. There's no question of... should not be force or... Yeah, on the other hand, there should be more preaching so that devotees understand that they are not being forced to do anything, but it's an appeal to them to do it for Krishna. And they should do it with love and devotion. And that's why it may be better sometimes we switch different service. Like if somebody feels that I'm not, why should I keep on doing it? And it becomes monotonous also. Like it's like a conveyor belt service, you know, like one, the same thing, day in and day out, doing the same thing day in and day out, becomes quite boring for the devotees. So they can change service also. Sometimes the cooks can go out distributing books and book distributors can go to the kitchen and cook. And I think that will... make their service more relishable. Because variety is actually the spice of life. If we keep on doing the same thing every day, it is natural that they will feel a little tired. So we should do everything with as a team. Not that every day a specific service for everybody. And that service, what we render, must be done spontaneously. And actually, then it becomes like a game, right? Then it is not a forced duty, but it becomes like a play. And actually, Prabhupada emphasized on that issue. You see, one day, Kirtan, early days in 26 Second Avenue, Prabhupada got Kirtananda Maharaj to give a lecture, Sunday feast lecture. Prabhupada was sitting there, and Prabhupada asked Kirtananda Maharaj to give the lecture. So Kirtananda Maharaj was telling that how in Krishna consciousness everything is blissful. You chant Hare Krishna, you sing Hare Krishna, you dance, you take Krishna prasad, and you render, you do a little work. And Prabhupada stopped him. He says, no, in Krishna consciousness we don't work. In Krishna consciousness, we simply enjoy. He says, there is no work. And Prabhupada pointed out the difference between work and service. You see, work has certain pressure involved, right? But service is spontaneous. Like somebody is playing in the field, right? And he's exerting himself, right? He's, say, a football player, right? He's actually working real hard. He's working harder than practically anybody. But for him it is a game, right? He's enjoying, you know, like although he's working very hard, but for him it is pleasure, right? So in Krishna consciousness it should be like that. Whatever we do, we must do with do with a spirit of joy. And then only we'll be able to render service properly. Another example can be given. When one does something for love, it's not work actually. Like a girl and a boy, those who are in love with each other, they goes out on a walk, and then the girl says, "Oh, how beautiful that flower is on the top of a high peak of the tree. Top of the tree, there's a beautiful flower." She appreciates, she admires the flower. And the boy immediately runs, climbs up the tree and picks the flower, right? He exerts himself so much and he comes back panting, right? Like his tongue literally sticking out of his mouth. And he offers the flower to the girl. Is this work? No, it's not work. It's just an expression of his love. So if in the mundane platform people can express that kind of love, like what one can do on the spiritual platform for Krishna.
On the other hand, the activities in Krishna consciousness are of a transcendental nature. He said, no, the beginning or the point of saturation is like, you also chant every day, you have to sing on an upshot. So you don't say, after 1 year, you're going to chant a different number, you're going to be in variety. You just have to go deeper into the chanting.
Right. That is, on an advanced stage, yes, on an advanced stage, there is no question of monotony, right? Like on an advanced stage, a devotee will keep on chanting 24 hours a day. But we can't do that. Actually, we are chanting different mantras, right? Like we are not chanting Hare Krishna all the time. We are saying so many other things. And often we, actually most of our time is spent on chanting Maya mantra, yeah? Like Prajalpa. Right? That shows that we didn't really develop the taste as yet. But once you develop the taste, then we can keep on doing it all the time. But it's also understandable that we are not going to become a pure devotee overnight. It'll take time. You know, like we have to burn out a lot of our bad habits from the past. Yes. No, in the highest platform, a devotee will just act, just do whatever pleases Krishna. Right? Mm-hmm. If just one activity pleases Krishna, then he will do it. And that's what the pure devotees do. The activity that pleases Krishna the most, that's chanting his holy name, they do it all the time. Right? So, doing one thing is all the time is not in the mode of ignorance. In the highest platform, one actually does that. I know one devotee in Vrindavan. He has been cooking for the deities there, cooking for the Lord in Vrindavan. At least I have seen him doing it for last 10 years. In 1977, when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, he was the cook. He was cooking for the deities. And he is doing it still today. Every day he gets up in the morning and he attends Mangalarti and he goes to the kitchen. And he is in the kitchen till 11 o'clock at night. And the amazing thing is, and while he is cooking for the deities, he is chanting the holy name all the time. He must be a pure devotee, although he is not noticeable as such.
About Sanjay, can we speak also about he can switch sometimes? Sanjay devotees can go cook and cook.
That should be done with the temple authority. If you want to do that, you can approach the temple authority and ask them whether it's practical or... Actually, service is not whimsical. When we render service, we do not say, I like to do it, that's why I'm doing it. And that is not service, that's Maya. Right? What is service? Service means whatever Krishna likes, we do that for Krishna's pleasure. Now in the beginning, we are not actually tuned up to Krishna's desires. So that's why we get tuned up to the temple authority's desire and render service according to the instruction of the temple authority. And then it is service. Right? So you may like to do something and you can approach the temple authority. And temple authority may say, well, so you don't go to the distribute books on Sunday, so you cook the Sunday feast. Yes.
The question was, can we also see the same association, the same thing, and the Buddhists also with the same relation with Adiyatras also, just to see the origins and the inspiration?
Maybe these are, you know, like these are more detailed things, so we can discuss it in a separate meeting, right?
Last time we started speaking, Sometimes we stand up, we don't have to sleep more than 6 hours. But I hear some people who send me that for some children who are about 7, some kind of 8 hours.
Is that a time or not?
Is it? I see. Rohini Sutta Prabhu's case is different. You see, his body is very weak. He has a very weak body. So he sometimes sleeps a little more. But I think Sankirtan devotees should sleep less. Because they're all, throughout the day, they're in the fire of Krishna consciousness. So more you are in the fire of Krishna consciousness, less sleep you need. Isn't it? Like I notice, when I'm doing something that I like to do, I need less sleep. If I am enjoying the association of devotees, I don't need to sleep so much. But when I'm not, you know, joyful, when I'm not ecstatic, then I have to sleep more. So that is actually an indication how much you are enjoying your service. If you enjoy your service, then you won't feel like sleeping. Like if you like to do something, like we see when the karmis have their, festivals and things, you know. When the karmis have big festivals, although they're in the mode of ignorance, they stay up the whole night. Right? How do they manage it? Because they're enjoying. And biologically it is said that your adrenaline gland becomes excited and your body gets fired up. Yes, Mataji?
Most of the time, the time that the body is drunk,
Well, I mean, they should not become fanatical, right? That they sleep for 4 hours, but they keep on dozing off on the wheel while they're driving. That will be disastrous, right? So they should sleep enough so that they feel healthy. I was just pointing out that we should not think that it is a law that Sankirtan devotees should sleep for 7 or 8 hours. Sometimes if it is necessary, yes, if he is not feeling strong enough, and he has to drive a long way, yes, he can sleep a little longer. No harm. Okay, let's take it from this side.
If I accidentally next
Yeah, yeah. That's what happened to us once. We were with Prabhupada in Rishikesh. And Prabhupada, by mistake, some of us took grains in the morning. And we reported to Prabhupada that, Prabhupada, we took grains today. Prabhupada got very angry that why we did not care for Ekadasi. Prabhupada pointed out we should actually meditate on when the Ekadasi is. And we should look forward to the Ekadasi day. Right? Not that, you know, we should think that, well, I mean, today is Ekadasi also, let me fast from grains. That shouldn't be our mentality. And then Prabhupada called Pradyumna. Pradyumna was Prabhupada's pandit. He was a Sanskrit scholar. Although he's an American, but he was a great Sanskrit scholar. Prabhupada called him, and Prabhupada chastised him very much. He said, "What kind of pandit you are? You don't even know when the Ekadasi is." And he said that you're carrying trunks full of books with you wherever you go. And you do not even know when the Ekadasi is. And he said that this carrying the books is like carrying the burden of a donkey. A donkey carries a big weight on his back, but the donkey doesn't have any use of that weight. Prabhupada was very angry. So we can understand how angry Prabhupada was. And then Prabhupada then told us to follow Ekadasi the next day, to fast on the next day. But the main thing is that we should be concerned when the Ekadasi is, and we should look forward to the austerity of that Ekadasi. That is the day we are going to be strict. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur said that every Ekadasi day we should evaluate how much progress we made since last Ekadasi. The devotee always tries to make advancement this way.
The best is that on Ekadashi, actually, the foods are very simple. Because in Belgium, we always try chips.
Yeah, right. So I know. I know. I was maybe Panduraj Prabhu can Panduraj Prabhu can save the chips for Dwadasi. And we can have a so maybe we can do it from now, he can do it on Dwadasi day. What do you say? Well, I mean, well, I was just a suggestion like that. Okay, which way should I go? Okay, Purna Tattva Prabhu, raise the hand. Only milk on Dwadasi day? I never read that. Prabhupada, actually Prabhupada said to have a feast on Dwadasi. Generally that's what the system is, like on Dwadasi we have a feast. But nowadays it has become Ekadasi feast and Dwadasi feast. Christian actually raised his hand. It's been, okay.
Maharaj, you said that when actually you do something of service, and you actually like doing these things more concentrated, well, because you don't actually know the Krishna. But it is so that in the Krishna conscious moment, everyone is giving service according to his fasting and his yogis to something which he is doing. So, normally it's like that when you do something which he is able to do.
Yeah, as I was pointing out, you see, we are not pure devotees the day, we do not become pure devotees the day we join, right? We have a lot of our impurities in us, but the understanding is to purify our impurities, right? So, in the beginning, we are given the service that we like to do or we have the propensity for. And Prabhupada also, you know, made it very clear that engagement should be done according to one's propensity. Because we want to have the best of everything. Like if you have the ability to do something very nice, then why should you not take advantage of that quality that you have? Right? But then, as we make advancement, as we become Vaishnavas, pure Vaishnavas, then we become expert in everything. What a Vaishnava, whatever he does in the most expert way. Right? But till the time we do not become that advanced Vaishnavas, then we are given the responsibility or service according to our propensity by the authority. And authority should be also very expert in understanding who is good in doing what. Like Prabhupada was very expert, and that's why when Prabhupada was here, everybody was happy. Because Prabhupada would engage everybody according to his propensity and he would like to do it. Right? So, but you'll notice, as we become advanced, then we like to do whatever we are doing it for Krishna, doing for Krishna. Whatever we do for Krishna, we like to do it. Yes?
In the verse, you spoke about much forgiving.
Right. Actually, that's good. That's true. I was also thinking of saying that. Like, don't exhaust all your questions today, because we can have the. Yeah. Right. Right. Okay. So this is the last question. Yeah.
You spoke about Devi Sudharma, and if not so many Devi, do you know about his birth, who was his family, who was interested in Krishna and Balaram, and also if she was Srimati Radharani or Lakshmi Devi, and in the same question, also in the morning, the devotee sometimes are chanting during Tulasi Rati the name of Srimati Radharani, is it proper or not?
Mm. You see, Krishna's father, Vasudev, had many wives. I think he had 12 wives, if I'm not mistaken. And Krishna is from Devaki. Krishna is born of Devaki. Balaram also is born of Devaki, but he was transferred into the womb of Rohini. And Subhadra is born of another wife of Vasudeva. So, and Subhadra's identity is that she is Jogamaya. She is not exactly Lakshmi Devi or Radharani. She is Krishna's Jogamaya potency. Krishna's birth,
She spoke to his parents, she spoke to Kansa, said that Krishna is born in her place. And what happened is Krishna
Manifested herself on this planet in different Devi forms, like Durga, Jagadhatri, etc. There are different forms of Devi, like Durga, Kali. Those forms are her forms. She disappeared, and then she manifested herself in those forms. Tulasi Devi is actually from Vrindavan. She is in Vrindavan, and she is Vrindadevi. So you can sing Radharani, because actually Tulasi Devi is Radharani's friend. So when you are glorifying her, then you can also glorify Radharani. That's not a mistake.
So the last question, you tell the story of Ekadashi. You spoke about Ekadashi, but sometimes it's difficult to exactly explain why Krishna...
I see. Yeah, the story is like, it's like when Krishna created this universe, Krishna created also sin, right? Not sin, but from the sinful activities of people, the sin was created. The different kinds of sins actually personified in the personality of sin. And in the material nature, naturally people become very sinful. And when person becomes sinful, they are taken to the abode of Jamaraj and they are punished. So one day Krishna went to visit Jamaraj. And when, because Jamaraj is a pure devotee of Krishna, Mahajan. So then Krishna heard some inhuman cries of agony. People were crying and shouting and screaming in pain. So Krishna wondered why people were crying like that, where the sound is coming from. So he asked Jamaraj, what's the matter? Who are these people? Why they are crying like this? So Jamaraj said, pointed out to the southern side and said that the sinful people are there and they are suffering different punishments because of the sinful activities. So Krishna, who is very merciful, he felt very compassionate towards those living entities, those who are suffering for their sins. So Krishna, immediately there, Krishna produced Ekadasi. She appeared in a female form. And Krishna announced that if anybody observes Ekadasi on that day, on the 11th day of moon, so he will become free from all his sinful reactions. So that is how Krishna made arrangements that living entities can become free from their sinful activities and go back to Godhead just by observing Ekadasi on that day. And so people were just, observing Ekadasi and they were becoming purified and they all were going back to Godhead. But then one day sin approached Krishna and he became completely sick and thin. And he was so weak that he could barely walk. Then Krishna asked him, what happened? Why you were in such a miserable condition? So this person said, same personified said, my Lord, you are my creator and you are my maintainer also. But it's because of you that I have become like this. He said, all the people are observing Ekadasi and becoming purified from their sinful reactions. So now, there is no sin left and my body is becoming reduced and I am almost non-existent now. So Krishna said, oh, I see. So then Krishna announced, okay, on this day, all the sins will take shelter on grain. And whoever takes grain on this day will take all the sins also. So, yeah, you can keep your questions tomorrow. And no, today we finished. The class has been quite long today. So another day we will do that. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.